Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today we're talking about Anna Karenina, part 2, chapter 17. Levin doesn't want the classes to merge, should he? Is Levin now avoiding Kitty? Sluggy with 3G says, I like these last few chapters, mainly because Levin is acting like a jerk, bear with me. He's obviously rattled by the news about Kitty and he's reliving his emotions from when she rejected him but in a typically human fashion. He's taking it out on everyone and everything around him. He himself can't even put his finger on what exactly he is upset about. So he is rude to the merchant, argumentative with Steva, vindictive towards Kitty, and in a general bad mood about everything. Several chapters earlier, Levin is trying hard to let his frustrations about the farm roll off of him and enjoy the spring weather. But once he starts brooding on the situation with Kitty, these frustrations boil over and he starts lashing out at anyone near him. I think this brings more dimension and depth to his character overall and makes him feel that much more real. Once he finally faces up to what has been bothering him, he instantly realizes he has been acting rudely and apologizes to Steva. Steva, of course, has realized this the entire time, and despite everything we know about him, it is really hard not to like Steva during these chapters. We can see the good parts of his character coming through in these chapters, as he is patient and empathetic to his friend. Just as Levin is not a paragon of goodness, neither is Steva the embodiment of badness. They are both just humans with their own virtues and flaws, and with each chapter it feels like we are learning about different aspects of their characters. Decrific said, Levin is the perfect example of an old-school conservative, European, not American, conservative. Edmund Burke called it his little platoons of people driven by the things they love. Their values are deeply rooted in their areas, their love of the land, their neighbours, of the animals, of the forests and the trees and the birds. Burke was the first to recognise that we all have prejudices, some of those we need to get rid of, and others prejudices are necessary to survive. Take the example of the speculator and Dolly's forest. He is only interested in making money from money. He doesn't produce, tend, and cull the forest. He's speculating on the price of the wood itself. The old school conservatives like Levin. To old school conservatives like Levin, that's an immoral way to make a living. He's not contributing, but exploiting other people. He's also devaluing what others have loved and worked hard to maintain. A long time ago, the right and the left used to share this idea. So Levin's whole value system is directly threatened by the speculator and indirectly by people like Steva who just don't seem to care or get it at all. Steva only seeks pleasure and distraction in life. Levin wants a genuine one that matters. A life filled with things he loves and cherishes. His prejudice against the merging of the social classes is a case to consider, though. I wonder what he would have made of the emancipation of the working class in the West, who have emancipated themselves by being self-employed and moved on to the middle class. I hope he would have seen the error of his way and considered it a good thing. Format Kaka said he is probably confused with all the information hitting him. I want a happy life. I'll go horse riding and farming. Shit, my brother's here. Oh, yeah, it's Oblonsky. Oh, no, Kitty is ill. Oh, no, Oblonsky is selling his farm for free. Shit, what's happening? What he is speaking is probably not exactly what he wants to convey, but not very useful to extrapolate stuff here and build too much into his character. Once everything calms down, I believe he will run off to meet Kitty. I Am Norwegian said, I have had an impression of Vronsky as very liberal, and this chapter made me question that. I can't remember if I ever really had cause for that assumption, but at the same time, his rhetoric was influenced heavily by the insinuation that he and Vronsky were in the same class of people. I think he meant to say Levin in that first sentence. He was angrily ranting more than he was sharing his genuine views. Levin should not wish for the classes to merge, given how Russia's near future looked. Even peasants who did better than those around them were labelled kulaks and killed in droves, often by their jealous neighbours. Is he avoiding Kitty? Levin is still not a brave man, so it's going to take some prodding and time before he'll do anything. Okay. Sorry for breezing through that and stumbling over my words. I'm in a bit of a food coma right now. Bit drowsy from eating a whole pizza. Probably wasn't necessary to eat a whole pizza, but that's what I did. This is chapter 18. It's quite a short chapter, so this will be quite a short podcast by the looks of things. Chapter 18. Though Vronsky's whole inner life was absorbed by his passion, his external life ran unalterably and inevitably along its former customary rails of social and regimental connections and interests. The interests of the regiment occupied an important place in his life because he was fond of his regiment, and still more because the regiment was fond of him. Not only were they fond of him, they respected him too, and were proud of him. Proud that this man, with his enormous wealth and excellent education and abilities, to whom the road to success of all kinds gratifying to ambition or vanity lay open, had disregarded all this, and of all life's interests, had nearest to his heart those of his regiment and his comrades. Vronsky was aware of this attitude of his comrades towards him, and besides liking the life, felt bound to justify their view of him. It goes without saying that he spoke to none of them about his love, nor did he betray himself even in the wildest drinking bouts. Indeed, he never drank so as to lose all self-control, and he silenced any of his thoughtless comrades who tried to hint at the liaison. But in spite of this, his love affair was known to all of the town. Everybody guessed more or less correctly what his relations with Anna Karenina were. Most of the young men envied him just on account of what was most trying in the affair, namely Karenin's high rank and the consequent prominence of the affair in society. The majority of young women who envied Anna and had long been weary of hearing her virtues praised were pleased at what they guessed, and only waited to be sure that public opinion had turned before throwing the whole weight of their scorn at her. They already prepared lumps of mud to pelt her with in due time. Most of the older people, and of those highly placed, regretted this impending social scandal. Vronsky's mother, on hearing of the matter, was at first pleased, both because, in her opinion, nothing gave such finishing touches to a brilliant man as an intrigue in the best society, and also because this Anna Karenina, who had so taken her fancy and who had talked so much about her little son, was after all such as the Countess Vronsky expected all handsome and well-bred women to be. But latterly she had heard that her son had refused a post of importance for his career merely to remain with his regiment and be able to see Anna Karenina, and that exalted persons were dissatisfied with him for it, so she changed her opinion. She was also displeased because, from all she heard of it, this affair was not one of those brilliant, graceful society liaisons which she approved, but a desperate, Werther-like passion, which might lead him into doing something foolish. She had not seen him since his sudden departure from Moscow, and through her eldest son she sent him word to come and see her. The elder brother was also dissatisfied with the younger. He did not distinguish what kind of love it was, great or small, passionate or passionless, guilty or pure. He himself, the father of a family, kept a ballot girl, and was therefore lenient in these matters. But he knew that it was a love affair which displeased those women it is necessary to please, and he therefore disapproved of his brother's conduct. Besides his military and social interests, Vronsky had another one, namely horses, of which he was passionately fond. That year there was to be an officer's steeplechase, and Vronsky had put down his name, bought an English thoroughbred mare, and in spite of his love was passionately, though restrainedly, concerned about the coming races. The two passions did not interfere with one another. On the contrary, he needed an occupation and an interest, apart from his love, in which to refresh himself and find rest from the impressions which agitated him too violently. There we go, that's chapter 18, Dunsky. Have your say about chapter 18 on the Hemingway List subreddit. Thanks very much for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.